Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, your host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is April the 11th, 2024. It has been 3,727 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 51 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 48 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Wednesday and Thursday morning. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. There are only minor map updates today. The Russia-Ukraine War Report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, Operational Commands North, South and East of Ukraine, Open Source Intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, the truth, because the truth matters. Here is my daily assessment. 1. Our earlier assessment that Ukraine's supply of air defense munitions would reach a catastrophic state by April was regrettably accurate. 2. United States House Speaker Mike Johnson has clearly signaled he will not advance any aid package for Ukraine to a vote, and we maintain that military aid to Ukraine has ended unless there is a change in political leadership. 3. We maintain that without the restoration of air defense, Ukrainian troops will be forced to continue to withdraw from areas the Russian aerospace forces target for intense bombardment. 4. Based on multiple reports that the United States has set multiple restrictions on what military equipment can be provided and how it can be used due to a misguided fear of a Russian tactical nuclear strike, the world is caught in the mutually assured destruction and stability paradox. 5. Russian forces are setting conditions to capture Chasiv Yar, regardless of cost. 6. Russia is also setting conditions in two additional operational areas for future wider attacks. But we continue to question how much combat potential will be available to expand current operations this summer. 7. Russia's trampling of international humanitarian law has been accelerating since March the 22nd. In our assessment, the willful ignoring of blatant Russian war crimes by international watchdogs will continue to encourage escalation. 8. The disjointed response to Russian aggression by Ukraine's allies continues to embolden Moscow, leading to the most serious airspace violation of a NATO country since Russia expanded its war of aggression on February 24, 2022. Inaction by the United States and the excessively risk-averse rules of engagement forced on the NATO alliance are creating an environment ripe for a serious international incident. 9. The continued attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure have incrementally increased the chance of an intentional nuclear accident at multiple nuclear facilities in Ukraine, and the situation is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. We start today's report in Kharkiv Oblast. It's been worse, but yesterday and this morning was a very bad day for Ukraine on and off the battlefield. The city of Kharkiv was hit by 12 S-300 anti-aircraft missiles used for a ground attack on Thursday morning. Electrical infrastructure was repeatedly hit, knocking out power to 200,000. The metro was offline. On Wednesday, Russian forces bombed a school in Lipetsi, releasing a video claiming it was an ammunition depot. The area struck was what Americans call a strip mall, business offices, and a farm supply company. The video they released didn't show any significant secondary explosions. The pharmacy, workshop, and surrounding businesses were destroyed. 3 people were killed, including a child. 2 more were wounded. Russia bombed Vovchansk with Fab 500 UMPK glide bombs, destroying the hospital. 2 medical employees and a 3rd man were injured. We link to pictures in our situation report showing the destruction. there is a link in the podcast description. In the Kremina area of operation Oryo in Luhansk Oblast, Russian forces made three more attempts to advance on Terny from the east, suffered heavy losses, and retreated in the direction of Dubrova. South of Kremina, Major Evgeny Polovodov, with the Russian 2nd Army Corps of the so-called Luhansk People's Republic, was escorting a group of Russian propagandists. The entire group arrived in a Russian armored personnel carrier and were wearing Russian military uniforms with no brass markings. They came under artillery fire, with Polovodov killed and two propagandists with Vesti Luhansk, Artem Yundas and Denis Shum, wounded. Here is our statement on this incident. Our team has consistently condemned all attacks on journalists in all conflicts, regardless of the combatant they represent. But as conflict reporters, journalists in combat zones are bound by rules of engagement, including being readily identifiable as members of the press. The video released by Russia One and Vesti Luhansk clearly shows that the propagandists were indistinguishable from combatants, including wearing patches on their helmets and arms that, from a distance, could be construed as Red Friend 04 markings worn by Russian combat troops. Further, they arrived in a Russian military vehicle with no press markings, as required under international law. Journalists are never military targets and have protected status, and internationally recognized protocols must be followed. But the rules apply to members of the press too, especially when operating on the front lines. In the Siversky of Luhansk Oblast, fighting continued southeast and east of Bilohorivka, with no change in the situation. Moving to the Donbas, it is very difficult in northeastern Donetsk Oblast for Ukrainian troops. In the Siversky of Donetsk Oblast, a mildly graphic video showed that the April 9th Russian attack near Verkhnyokamenskoye was southwest of Zolotarivka and conducted by a squad of light infantry, which was repulsed. We link to the video in the situation report, as almost all of the videos and pictures are referenced in today's podcast. Russian claims of further advances in the direction of Vyimka were false, with a Russian video showing a night strike of Grad rockets reportedly on Ukrainian positions. The video didn't provide any proof that Ukrainian troops were there, and most of the rockets landed in the middle of fields. The geolocation was just north of the last known position of Russian troops, further confirming there had been no advance. Or Russia attacked their own. In the Soledar Raion, Russian troops continued to probe Ukrainian defenses south of Rozdolivka, with no change in the situation. Intense fighting continued in the Konstantinivka Raion. Fighting continued in Bogdanivka, with no reliable information on territorial control. Russian forces continued relentless attacks on the approaches to Chasiv Yar. A video showed that on the T-504 highway from Bakhmut to the destroyed bridge in Vanivske, the road is littered with destroyed Russian vehicles and armor. Ukraine used a ground-launched small-diameter bomb launched from an M142 guided multiple launch rocket system, better known as HIMARS, to strike Russian troop concentrations. A spokesperson with Operational Command East said, quote, "For now, Chasiv Yar remains a Ukrainian city. This city is controlled by units of the armed forces and the defense forces. There are no Russian troops in the city or its surroundings." Unquote. A Ukrainian video showed that Russian Su-25 ground attack aircraft were conducting close air support for Russian troops with impunity due to a lack of air defense weapons. Further south, heavy positional fighting continued near Klishivka, with no change in the situation. Yesterday I told you that the VKS, Russian Aerospace Forces, bombed Konstantinivka, and two people were missing. Both bodies were recovered on Wednesday, and search and rescue efforts have ended. Northeast of occupied Myronivsky on the Donetsk-Luhansk Oblast's administrative border, Ukrainian Special Operation Forces destroyed a Russian Borisoglebsk II electronic warfare vehicle. The Borisoglebsk II can jam satellite communications, radio navigation systems, GPS, GLONASS, and other frequencies, and is a state-of-the-art system that costs an estimated $200 million. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, the intensity of fighting remains reduced in the Avdiivka AO, but will almost certainly increase in the next 1 to 4 days. Fighting continued in Berdychi. A very graphic video filmed by a squad of Russian light infantry showed the approaches to the village are littered with the body parts of dead soldiers and their equipment. They did not appear to be in a hurry to reach the line of conflict. Fighting continued on the southern edge of Semenivka, with a geolocated video showing Russian light infantry had reached the first group of houses, but appeared unable to consolidate their positions. Russian forces also continued to attack in the direction of Umanske from Vodyane, with no change in the situation. Our skepticism of the claims by the People's Militia of the Donetsk People's Republic that the settlement of Parvomayske was captured was well placed. That answer would be no. Ukrainian forces with the 59th Mortar Infantry and the 109th and 111th Territorial Defense Brigades made it quite clear they still controlled the southwest part of the settlement and even advanced to the east, raising the flag at the school in the center of the village. The other area of intense fighting was in the Vuhledar AO. The Ukrainian 46th Air Assault Brigade reported that Russian troops had occupied the southeastern edge of Krasnohorivka. Remember the T-72 total tank that first appeared on April the 8th? Apparently that wasn't a one-and-done. A mildly graphic video showed at least two more used in battle, which were destroyed. A shout-out to analyst Andrew Perpetua, who had speculated that the total tanks weren't up armored for battle, but improvised armored personnel carriers. The video shows that he was correct. Russian forces continued positional fighting east of Georgievka and southwest of Pobeda, with no change in the situation. Heavy fighting continued in Novomikhailivka, with the Ukrainian 79th Air Assault Brigade holding their defensive lines. Russian forces continued their subordinate attacks in the Staromlinivka AO. Russian troops continued their attempts to advance on Urozhaine from the south and suffered significant losses. Geolocated drone video confirmed the existing line of conflict and showed a platoon of destroyed Russian armor. Fighting continued west of Staromayorske with no change in the situation. In Zaporizhia Oblast, Russian assaults continued in the Orikhiv AO, with positional fighting northwest of Verbove. A squad of Russian mechanized infantry was able to penetrate Ukrainian lines to the center of Robotyne and was eliminated. We adjusted the war map based on the repeated incursions, as we find it unlikely that Ukrainian troops are holding the trenches that were part of the Surovikin line near Novoprokopivka. Traitor and Putin-appointed illegitimate governor of occupied Zaporizhia Oblast Evgeny Balitsky announced that Ukrainian pensioners who accepted passportization will no longer be paid. A cut-off date was not announced, but the ending of state pensions is, quote, due to the limitation of allocations of social fund funds. In the run-up to Thursday's meeting of the Board of Governors of the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Ukraine demanded Zaporizhia Nuclear Power Plant, ZNPP, be returned to Ukrainian control. Quote, Russia is the only terrorist state in the world that not only captured, militarized, and is trying to steal a nuclear power plant, but also uses it as a platform for propaganda. Unquote. Ukrainian officials called for the IAEA to neutralize the threat to nuclear safety at ZNPP, condemn the Russian provocations at the plant, demand the immediate reconnection of radiation monitors, and enforce previous resolutions calling for Russian occupiers and troops to withdraw from the plant and return control to Ukraine. In the Kherson AO, Russian forces launched 5 attacks on Ukrainian positions in Krynke, with no change in the situation. On Wednesday morning, a Russian attack on critical electrical infrastructure in Mykolaiv knocked out power to most parts of Free Kherson, where restoration efforts were ongoing. Near the occupied Oleshka sand dunes, Russian forces released a video showing the remains of a bunker where one-way drones were produced in the field. There was an accident causing the explosive charges to ignite, tearing the arm off of one Russian soldier and wounding a second. The bunker continued to burn and have secondary explosions for 2 days, likely due to a combination of explosives and lithium-ion batteries. The Russian troops reported that everything for drone production was destroyed and they would have to, quote, start over. Here's a better idea. Go home. Madjar and his magic pointer are waiting for you. Here is the situation in the Black Sea, occupied Crimea and Odessa. All but one of the operational warships of the Black Sea fleet have been relocated to the Russian port of Novorossiysk, where the most critical infrastructure to support naval operations has been established. In occupied Sevastopol, the only operational Russian ship remaining is the Project 22-800 Karakurt-class corvette Cyclone, the newest ship in the Black Sea fleet. Russian officials confirmed a Russian Mi-24 Hind attack helicopter exploded and crashed off the coast of occupied Crimea, with the loss of the aircrew. The incident was reportedly due to a technical malfunction. Russia attacked Odessa, the Zatoka area, and the Danube River port of Izmail repeatedly. 4 Iskander-M short-range ballistic missiles, SRBMs, and 2 Iskander-K surface-to-surface ballistic cruise missiles hit port infrastructure and shipping and logistics centers that support the export of grain. 1 SRBM missile hit a gas station, killing 4, including a child, and wounding 10 more, including a 4-year-old girl. The attacks destroyed retail stores, grain warehouses, and administrative buildings. A pig farm in Nerubayske was hit, causing a large fire and wounding 1. Missile debris landed on civilian energy infrastructure. Only light damage was reported. Here's what's happened in central, western, northern and northeastern Ukraine. First up, a Russian drone or missile struck civilian housing near Oleksandriya in the Kirovohradska Oblast, damaging 6 apartments and commercial buildings. No casualties were reported. South of Lviv, 4 Kh-47 Kinjal air-to-surface ballistic missiles hit the Bilchevolitsko-Uherska gas compressor station and storage facility, the largest in Europe and 5th largest in the world. The underground storage area is 2 kilometers below the surface and has a 17 billion cubic meter capacity. Pipelines from the Bilchevolitsko-Uherska connect to Poland and Slovakia and store natural gas for Ukraine and several NATO alliance nations. This was the 3rd attack on the facility in the last 30 days, and at the time of publication, the status of the pipeline and compressors was unknown. Missiles also struck the electrical substation in Chervonograd, Lviv. With air defenses exhausted, multiple Russian missiles struck the Tripilska thermal power plant in Kyiv, with videos and pictures showing the entire facility engulfed in flames. Centrenergo reported the plant, which supplies power to Kyiv, Cherkasy and Zhytomyr oblasts, is completely destroyed. At the time of publication, local officials reported that electrical service was not impacted, but water was disabled in parts of Kyiv. Residents in the suburb of Ukrainka were advised to close their windows due to toxic smoke. Since March the 22nd, Russia has completely destroyed every coal-fired power plant in Ukraine. During this morning's missile attack, the Polish Air Forces scrambled F-16s, and 2 U.S. Air Force KC-135T Strata tankers flew from Mildenhall Air Base in the United Kingdom to Poland and Romania. The aircraft that flew to Poland orbited near Lublin. There were no reports of NATO airspace violations. Polish farmers continued their Russia-backed protests, blocking the Ukrainian border checkpoints at Raworuska, Jagodin and Ugrinyev. The action is continuing despite European Union financial concessions and new regulations on Ukrainian agricultural inputs. The Jagodin checkpoint is the largest between Ukraine and Poland and typically can process up to 1,400 trucks a day. Currently, only 70 vehicles are moving through. Protesters, aligned with the Polish Confederate Party, have stopped blocking cars, buses, and military and humanitarian aid. The weaponization of undocumented immigrants has restarted, with a video showing over 200 people storming a remote area of the Polish border with Belarus. Polish border guards were able to prevent anyone from crossing. On the Russian front, a Ukrainian drone struck the Zeleznogorsk mining and processing plant in the Kursk region, sparking a large fire. We geo-confirmed the video right before recording the podcast, so we don't have any other information. Satellite images show that the April 5th drone strike on the Yeysk military airfield in the Krasnodar Krai region destroyed a Russian Beriev B-200 amphibious aircraft. Russian officials had previously claimed that all Ukrainian drones were shot down without incident. Satellite images from Planet Labs and shared by the United States state media source Radio Liberty showed that the Ukrainian drone strike on the 711th aviation plant in Borisoglebsk-Voronezh region heavily damaged one of the assembly buildings. On Tuesday, Russia claimed that there was only light damage to the facade of one of the buildings. In the Kabardino-Balkarian Republic, Islamic extremists ambushed the Ministry of Internal Affairs in the city of Nalchik. At the time of recording, a standoff with 12 militants had turned into a running gun battle.
You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. Our team of journalists, researchers, and analysts is funded by readers, listeners, and viewers just like you. To support independent journalism, please consider becoming a patron. You can find us on patreon.com at Malcontent News.
Here is my theater-wide update. And just in case, go hide your favorite coffee mug. On the night of April the 10th and the 11th, Russia launched the largest drone and missile attack of the month. Ukrainian air defenses were able to shoot down 37 of 40 Shahed 136 one-way drones and 18 of 30 missiles that could be intercepted. 9 Tu-95MS strategic bombers launched 20 KH-101 cruise missiles from the Caspian Sea. 8 MiG-31K multirole fighters launched 6 KH-47 Kinjal air-to-surface ballistic missiles. And 4 KH-59 guided air-to-ground cruise missiles were launched by Su-34 and Su-35 aircraft from occupied Crimea. Ukrainian air defense appears to be out of PAC-3 interceptors for the Patriot air defense system, with no Kinjals intercepted. The United States ambassador to Ukraine, Bridget Brink, condemned the latest attack, writing on Twitter, also known as X, quote, "Last night, Russia launched more than 40 drones and 40 missiles into Ukraine. Kharkiv's critical infrastructure alone was struck by 10 missiles, and other cities, including Lviv and Zaporizhia, were impacted. The situation in Ukraine is dire. There is not a moment to lose." Unquote. On Wednesday, the Minister of Foreign Affairs for Ukraine, Dmytro Kuleba, said that soft and quiet diplomacy has not worked in securing additional air defense systems. Quote, "After our meeting with Josep Borrell in Brussels, I called him to discuss the steps taken to fulfill the mandate of the President of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, to find additional Patriot air defense systems for Ukraine. The High Representative informed me about steps taken by the EU. I thank my colleague for his active efforts. We know where the Patriot systems are located and are working at all levels to strengthen Ukrainian air defense." Unquote. Kuleba said that Ukraine has even offered to rent the air defense systems, to no avail. He noted that 4 European countries have Patriot systems that are unused and are currently not facing any clear or present danger. A usually calm Borrell was visibly frustrated, speaking at the Nueva Economica Forum, and said, quote, "It should be inconceivable that we were not able to provide 7 batteries, given that the Western armies have about 100 batteries of Patriot." Unquote. In breaking news, the Verkhovna Rada approved the Ukrainian mobilization bill with 283 votes in support of the changes. The decree heads to the desk of President Zelensky for his signature and will take effect 30 days later. The issue of demobilization was stripped from the law and will be taken up at a later date. The testimony by US Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin that Ukraine should refrain from attacking Russian oil refineries drew sharp rebuke in diplomatic circles and ridicule from unlikely sources, Russian propagandists. And not ha-ha ridicule, you have to be kidding ridicule. During the ongoing hearings, which continued on Wednesday, Congressman Austin Scott, a Republican from Georgia, asked Deputy Secretary of Defense Dr. Celeste Wallander about Austin's statement.
The Biden administration came out and condemned the Ukrainians for hitting Russia's oil and gas infrastructure and suggested that they should not do that again. Can you tell me why, while Russia is attacking Ukrainians' oil and gas and energy sector, why shouldn't the Ukrainians attack the Russian oil and gas and energy sector?
The issue on attacking critical infrastructure is when those are civilian targets, we have concerns because Ukraine holds itself to the highest standards of observing the laws of armed conflict, and that's one of the elements of being a European democracy.
But the Russians are attacking the oil and gas infrastructure in Ukraine, correct?
Absolutely.
And if you're going to win a war, you can't sit back and take punches and not deliver punches. So why shouldn't the Ukrainians attack the oil and gas infrastructure in Russia?
Congressman, we have concerns about striking at civilian targets when we support countries. Again, this is Ukraine's sovereign decision, but we express those concerns.
But those oil and gas infrastructures in Russia are owned by the Kremlin, correct? It's not like they're owned by a private corporation that have shareholders and private assets are being destroyed.
They are owned by private Russian citizens who are part of the Putin regime. That is correct.
I mean, it makes sense to me that we should destroy them.
Who is Dr. Celeste Wallander? She was part of the Obama campaign staff and served on the National Security Council during the Obama administration. She was nominated by U.S. President Joe Biden to her current role of Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Affairs in June 2021. And was confirmed by the Senate in February 2022. Prior to confirmation, she was the president of the U.S.-Russia Foundation, created in 2008 to, quote, support the building blocks of democracy in Russia, including rule of law, freedom of information, and free enterprise. Please, allow me this. If the organization was created in 2008 with that mission statement, I think it is safe to say it has failed. Miserably. And just to remind those who might have forgotten, 2008 is the year when Russia invaded neighboring nation of Sakartvelo. You might better know this country by its Russified name, Georgia. Moving to analysis. This brings up three questions. Under the Geneva Conventions and International Humanitarian Law, IHL, are oil refineries civilian infrastructure? Does the US have an established military doctrine that considers refineries as military targets? And has the International Criminal Court in The Hague or the United Nations ever considered the question? Rule 8 of IHL defines what is a military target. The first definition was established in 1907. When the first Geneva Convention was held, the term military target was changed to military objective, but was undefined. Rule 8 states that destroying a target that provides the enemy a, quote, definite military advantage is by definition not a civilian target. IHL also specifies that civilian workers in the defense industry or defense adjacent do not have automatic protected status. According to the International Committee of the Red Cross, at least two countries specifically define oil refineries as valid military targets – Australia and the European nation and US ally, the United Kingdom. The United States Department of Defense, DOD, has had a documented policy of considering oil refineries as military targets since 1943. And has attacked refineries during the Korean conflict, the Vietnam War, the First Gulf War, the Balkans, and the Second Gulf War. In 1993 congressional hearings, the DOD said they specifically destroyed the gasoline production capabilities of 12 Iraqi oil refineries because they, quote, had immediate military use. Since the formation of the United Nations in 1945, the General Council nor the Security Council has taken up the issue of attacking oil refineries as a violation of IHL, and neither has the International Criminal Court in The Hague. That is to say, in the 79 years of armed conflict since the formation of the UN, no international government body has even considered the question, despite dozens of attacks on refineries by combatants around the world. Are refineries civilian targets? No. Does United States military doctrine consider refineries as civilian infrastructure? No. On the contrary, the United States has an 83-year-old policy of targeting refineries. Has the ICC or the UN ever considered the question? No, which is in itself strongly suggests that neither body considers it a war crime. As I said earlier, the suggestion by Dr. Wallander, who should know US military history given her role, is so laughably bad that even Russian propagandists were left speechless. This raises a much darker question, but we deal with facts, not conspiracy theories. Let me take a deep breath. Moving on. NATO General Secretary Jens Stoltenberg supported the Ukrainian strikes, saying, quote, "Ukraine has the right to self-defense, and this also includes legitimate military targets outside Ukraine." Hours before the latest missile attack, Stoltenberg also addressed the issue of depleted air defenses, saying, quote, "Ukraine cannot wait. It needs air defense equipment, ammunition, and help. Now." U.S. General Christopher Cavoli, the supreme commander of NATO's Allied Forces Europe, warned Congress that Ukraine's artillery ammunition supply would also be catastrophic within weeks. Quote, "The seriousness of this moment cannot be overestimated. The side that can't shoot back loses." Germany announced another military aid package to Ukraine. There are too many items to list in the podcast, but you can go to the podcast description to find out how to become a patron. For $5 a month, you get access to our almost daily situation reports, which include a lot more information. The Czech Republic indicated that a, quote, "significant part" of the 480,000 artillery rounds that have been purchased for Ukraine will start to arrive by the end of June, indicating there is a month delay. Republicans in the House of Representatives have killed Congressman Michael McCaul's Repo Act, which would have seized Russian assets to guarantee loans to Ukraine for military aid. This ends the bill that Speaker Mike Johnson was saying would be put to a vote before the Easter holiday recess ended. The only good news I can tell you is that two more congresspersons signed Discharge Petition 9, but another 25 signatures are required to force a floor vote. And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.